Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome everyone to Sunday Morning Live, Dharma. Well, I'd like to start out with a talk story, which in Hawaii refers to a personal sharing. And this morning's sharing is of an incident that happened yesterday. And
a man walked on the moon.
Gee, I'm hearing a
it was a significant time in our
broadcast. Oh, there you go. Okay. Yesterday we went to, drove to Fresno, it's about a half an hour drive, and did some things there. And then on the way home in the afternoon, we stopped by our, you know, we sort of live out in a rural area, and the Postal Service, they have a group common area for the mailboxes, and you use a key and you access your mailboxes. So we stopped there. It's about a block away from our house, and we got our mail, and I was just about to pull a few feet away from the mailboxes when some smoke started coming out from under the hood of our Honda Odyssey minivan. So 2005, and then some flames shot out from the hood, and so Adrian got her mother out of the car, and I got out of the car, and our car caught on fire, and I thought it might be confined just to the hood or to the engine area, but it started to spread quite rapidly. And since we're only a block away from home, a neighbor who was passing by gave me a quick lift, and I got a fire extinguisher. But by the time I got back, the whole car was engulfed in flames, and that little puny fire extinguisher didn't do anything. And of course, we called 911 right away. And when you're waiting for a response in a situation like that, you say, "What's taking him so long?" But they came pretty promptly, and three trucks came, and they put out the fire. But by that time, the car was completely burned up. It was really something how ferocious fire can be, and how quick it was. we stood back at a safe distance and watched the excitement. And of course, neighbors did too, because smoke had gone up and black smoke. And it's quite an experience to see windows blowing out of your car from the heat, tires making a little explosion when they kind of blew up, and I guess other all kind of sounds going on. I guess airbags kind of blow up too a little bit. Of course, we were afraid that the gas tank might blow up, but it didn't do that, fortunately. But still, it didn't make any difference because the car, anything plastic, upholstery, of course, is all burned up inside, rugs and everything. It's just metal frames and parts like that left. And I was thinking, that poor car, we bought it new about 5 years ago, and you know, it has served us very well. It brought us across country when we moved to California 2 years ago. We took many trips in it, and it was a very good car. So we had a short, what we call kuyo in Japanese. It's, I guess the best translation is sort of like a gratitude service. And I think it shows not just our awareness or relationship with things around us, but sort of a general attitude of gratitude, you know, to life. It's not so much whether the object of gratitude deserves the gratitude or not. Because all things, you know, it's more the internal attitude of ourselves. In Japan, seamstresses every once a year, as an annual ritual, take all their broken needles and have a gratitude service. It's because of these needles that we were able to have a livelihood and so forth. I think Chano Yu tea students have a similar type of kuyo service for all the worn out bamboo whisks that they used during their lessons and during tea observances throughout the year and so forth. And so, although in everyday life we have moments of feeling gratitude toward things around us, it is nice to have a ritual about things that are, you know, really close to us, such as the seamstress's needles and things like this. And our cars, many people have a personal relationship with their cars. Give them names, and they feel that's just a natural thing that should be capitalized on, where you get, you know, pat the steering wheel when you get in and you appreciate your car. And especially older cars, you know, they're still chugging along and so forth. So and of course, whenever an accident type thing happens, you always, I guess, what they call count your blessings. And couldn't help but feel that of course that no one got hurt, and that it didn't happen while we were still on the highway, and we would be sort of stranded, you know, along the road. But here, we're only a block away from home, and that made a big difference, and all the neighbors were around, and things like this. So there's always counting blessings, which is a real feeling that you have when something happens. And I remember in a book called Invisible Eyelashes by Niwano Sensei, telling stories about different folk tales in Japan, and there's a story about a certain villager, and he had a nickname about grateful so-and-so, and everything that he was always grateful, you know, all the time. He was grateful when he saw how he greeted his family members every morning. It wasn't just a routine. So I'm really glad to see you, you know. Or when he suffered a gash on his leg in an accident, he said, oh, I'm so grateful. And of course, friends would say, hey, you just got a terrible gash. What are you grateful for? Well, I could have broken my leg. It sounds kind of too much to describe that kind of example, but I think when it is you that something happens and it has happened, it's not that you're grateful it happened, but having that it did happen, indeed, you know, you do have a genuine emotion that you do count your blessings. So there's a lesson for us there. Well, today, for our Dharma Glimpse, our guest is Giosayo Sugrains, and he lives in Orlando, Florida. And Gio, is that correct pronunciation of your last name?
Close enough. It's a Spanish Latin name, so it's more Sugrañez. So there's like a little tilde at the end, but it's always hard to put that in. It's not one of the fonts that you normally find on a keyboard.
So okay, I've
had everything from sugarcane to, you can imagine, but it's close enough.
Okay, I'm going to work on that. But he's currently finishing up in our lay ministry program, our class of 2010. So for today's Dharma Glimpse, Gio Sayo Sensei.
Well, good morning, everyone, and I'm really happy to be offering a Dharma Glimpse this morning. I think that my glimpse sort of goes along with what Reverend Coyo has described about the little car incident. And the reason is the title of my glimpse this morning is Disaster Movie Dharma. You know, and at first it sounds a bit weird and un-dharma-like, I guess you could say. You're asking yourself, what kind of dharma can be found in a disaster movie, you know, with people suffering and explosions and fires and earthquakes and so forth. So before I start, I'll give a little bit of a background info on myself. Before becoming fully engaged on the Buddhist path, I was a filmmaker and still am, more as a hobby now, but I actually prefer producing documentaries more. And I've always been a fan of classic disaster films, especially ones produced and directed by Irwin Allen, who did the Poseidon Adventure and the Towering Inferno. And but for me, I've always seemed to have learned something from these movies. You know, the other day I saw the latest disaster film, which was 2012, based on the ending of the Mayan calendar and the end of the world and all that. And although it is a bit scary with all the effects and actions, you know, this movie really had me contemplate a lot about not only my present situation, but realized how, you know, these sort of emergencies and disasters really can manifest at any time, and how prepared we should be when we encounter such tragedies or disasters. You know, if we think about the movie The Poseidon Adventure, for example, the people on board the Poseidon had no idea that a huge tsunami wave was coming to flip, you know, the ship over while they were celebrating the New Year. So, you know, we truly learn to really appreciate every moment, to really live every moment with mindfulness. And we also learn to develop more compassion towards those affected by real tragedies, like, the recent earthquakes in Haiti and Chile. And the idea of disaster movie dharma also goes along with what Gyomei Sensei taught with regards to everyday dharma, you know, exploring dharma in all forms. Or in our experiences, so that no moment in our life is wasted. You know, even watching a disaster film can lead us to a direct realization of some sort of truth, or at the very least, an awakening to some aspect in our life. And as I was listening to Reverend Coyo this morning about the car, you know, I'm sure, you know, we all face scenarios like that sometimes. You know, maybe the dishwasher breaks or the microwave breaks, and you know, we stand there and we turn to first get sort of upset, angry, you know, a little bit disoriented, but ultimately we realize, oh wait, you know, this is impermanent. Or you know, we tend to, like Koyo Sensei said, we learn to develop, you know, gratitude, you know, not to take things for granted. You know, you start to realize, you know, for example, without a car, all of a sudden, you know, you have no car. You find yourself having to perhaps take the bus, and you gain a new perspective on life and newfound gratitude. And when we look at the last words of the Buddha, you know, he mentions that the Dharma will be your guide, your teacher. And there are many interpretations of the word Dharma, but one that I really subscribe to is, you know, reality, or all phenomena, you know, really everything around us. So we can have direct realizations by simply being more observant of all the connections and all the things around us. You know, everything we own, from our cars to our dishwashers to even, you know, the pillow that you use every night to sleep on. You know, every moment is filled with teachings. And we simply just, you know, must be able to see through a lot of the dualistic concepts, you know, that we hear a lot of, like, you know, well, this is Dharma, you know, this isn't Dharma, you know, this is what Buddha said, this isn't what Buddha said. You know, really, ultimately, Dharma is all around us, you know, if we really look. A few years ago, I was at a teaching given by a Tibetan Lama, and he presented a similar topic on finding Dharma everywhere. And at that time, I thought, you know, well, a good Buddhist doesn't watch TV or movies, you know, because it takes us away from our meditative state. You know, when we see images of Buddha, he's sitting in equipoise. He's not sitting there reading a newspaper or watching, you know, TV. So, you know, I asked him, is it okay for me to watch TV and movies? And his answer was really simple. You know, if you watch TV or a movie and you can learn something, anything, or change the way you perceive you know, and things around you, then this is Dharma. And ever since then, I've always been able to pick up a teaching from even the most ridiculous of TV shows and movies, you know, turning these moments into Dharma practice and not just simple and ordinary watching of TV or a movie. You know, this way, when I'm asked, you know, how much time in a day do I dedicate to Dharma practice, you know, I answer every waking moment. You know, by being open toward finding Dharma, you know, anywhere and in anything, we also stop, you know, the dualistic idea that Dharma teachings and our practice are limited to only specific moments or places. You know, the Dharma is beyond, you know, a temple, and it's beyond, you know, sutras and so forth. So it is alive in all our experiences, and this in turn, we in turn then live, instead of an ordinary life, we live more an extraordinary, enlightened life every day. You know, so the next time you watch a movie or a TV show or simply live your life, you know, see if you can find a small glimpse, or as Koyo Sensei teaches, you know, a nugget, a little nugget of Dharma in your everyday life. And that is all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You know, having learned about your movie industry background, I meant to mention that I have a good friend, Tak Fujimoto, who I went to college with, and he's a cinematographer, and he did, he was a director of photography for Silence of the Lambs, and he did a lot of Sylvester Stallone movies, Pretty in Pink, and some of the earlier ones. He did work closely with Tom Hanks, Philadelphia Story, and other movies. And I learned a lot in terms of the art as an artist, how they see the world, or their, how it impinges on their lifestyle in terms of sometimes having to sort of shut down extraneous stimulation, not going out to eat or something, or keeping their senses sharp, or, you know, all kinds of different aspects related to artistic creation and vision and things like this. It's a fascinating glimpse into movie making industry. Well, for my sort of Dharma talk today, I like to talk about how the Buddha taught. Not what he taught, but how he taught. And when we, in our lay ministry class, look at the biography of the life of the Gautama Buddha, the author describes the Buddha's exchanges and how he influenced and taught people during his long life as he traveled around. It was said that so many people, even, you know, lay people, that they were enlightened by when they met him in a very brief exchange. And of course, maybe the stories get exaggerated, but he must have been a very charismatic, tremendous teacher, psychologist, so to speak, and he always was able to communicate with the people on their level. You know, some teachers, they speak at a high level, and they want the listener to rise up to their lofty level. But the way that the Buddha taught, whatever he taught, it changed the person. It changed their life. It wasn't just communicating some kind of information. This is has tremendous implications, I think, for us, and is a teaching in itself about how to live. You know, there's the famous story, Kisa Gotami, who was a mother that lost a precious baby. She had wanted a baby for so long, finally got one, and then it got sick and died, and she was carrying the dead body of the infant around, and she was just hysterical and going to people in the village, "Can you help me? Can you help me?" And finally someone suggested that the Buddha was nearby. He's a great teacher. Go to him. Maybe he could help you. So she did. And he said, "Yes, I'll help you." And she got all excited and "I'll do anything." He says, "Well, I'll help you. But first, before I do, could you go get a mustard seed and bring it to me, some mustard seeds?" And mustard seeds are common. They grow everywhere, and so all the families have mustard seeds. And just as she's about to leave, he says, "Oh, but one thing. You have to get a mustard seed from a household that has never experienced death." She goes, okay. She understood him, but she didn't know what he meant. So she went to the first house, said, "Can I have some mustard seeds?" They said, "Oh, sure." "Oh, has death ever visited your house?" "Oh, yeah. Grandparents passed away recently or something." "Oh, okay, that's no good." Went to the next house. And finally she realized, the truth of impermanence, the reality of impermanence. She's not in the boat by herself. And she realized that she received a great teaching about life. And so she went back to the Buddha and, you know, became one of his disciples and so forth. This is an example of how the Buddha taught. And I think in our life, because of our our brain, our cerebral cortex, we're able to imagine all kind of things. We're able to think about abstract things that we lose touch with the real world, concrete things, real people, real feelings. And our superior intellect and rationality is a double-edged sword. It's a tremendous, powerful tool, you know, that has given us so much. And yet, in other contexts, it's our worst enemy. And we feel we can be alienated from reality. Yeah? And that's why a lot of times it's refreshing when we see animals, how innocent and real they are, and very young children. And we need to retain this childlike innocence with the world, this honesty. And I was reminded about the different, when we talk about the dimension of concrete versus abstract, how young children are always very concrete. Their world is through their senses, what they see, what they feel, not some abstract concept. And in when kids say the darnest thing show, we find out kind of humorous stories like the child who was reciting the Pledge of Allegiance every day in school, where it comes to the part of one nation, indivisible. We listen carefully and a child is saying one naked individual. Or when they sing the song America and it comes to the lyrics, and guide her with the light from above. The children are saying, and guide her with the light from a bulb. You know, they're very concrete, huh? Not abstract. And sometimes we get caught up in logic or ifs or shoulds to the detriment of, you know, what we're experiencing, how we live. There was another story about an exchange between two people, and one said, well, if you're sailing in a sailboat and then a big wind came out, what would you do? You know, say a 25 mile an hour wind came up. Said, well, I throw over a 25 pound anchor. Then the person said, well, what if it was a 50 mile an hour wind? He said, well, I'd throw over a 50 pound anchor. So what if a 100-mile-an-hour wind came? He says, well, I'd throw out a 100-pound anchor. Then the other person said, wait a minute, where are you getting all these anchors? And then the other person said, well, the same place you're getting all that wind. I'd like to close with illustration that it sort of involves some profanity, so I hope I don't, we don't get sanctioned by Blog Talk Radio. This is for educational purposes. And in fact, I wrote about it, and it's been in psychology textbooks and everything, so. But this was a quote from Fritz Perls, who was a famous Gestalt psychologist, and he taught about how to, you know, be real. And this example has to do with we tend to over-intellectualize, you know, so that we don't have genuine encounters with people. we take for granted, and we'll have all kind of defensive things that we do. And the way we use language, you know, it filters out in a bad way what's right before us. And there, he says there's three kinds of SHIT. The first one is chicken SHIT. See, this is little stuff. And so this is when we use language for little stuff like, hey, how are you? How you doing? When you meet somebody. You know that's just social. It really doesn't mean, hey, how are you doing? Hey, good to see you. You know? It's just superfluous. Puff. You know? Now, the second S-H-I-T is the very familiar bull S-H-I-T. And when someone says, oh, that's BS, that's when you use language, you give an excuse. You give a rationalization. You don't see, accept things, you know, this is what happened or how it is or, you know. You're just using language in a sort of a slick way. To evade, you know, responsibility or and things like this. It's not truthful, okay? And then the third S-H-I-T is getting, is real big. First you had the chicken, then you had from the bull. Now you got elephant S-H-I-T. What is this? This is when we over-psychologize, over-philosophize, over-religicize. I just made up a word. It's when you, you know, it's psychobabble, or it's whenever you start preaching the Reverend Haya Akigarasu, my father's teacher, his admonition to all his disciples was, never preach Buddhism. If you preach Buddhism, Buddhism will die. So when we think about how the Buddha taught, how he related to people, he knew their phenomenology. He knew their psychological reality. He respected them as a unique person right in front of them. You know, not as a class of people or groups or, you know, it was real. And we need to, if our life is going to become rich, we need to do this every day with all people and all things. Thank you very much. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Join me in putting our hands together in oneness and gratitude. And we thank our guest, Gio Sayo Sensei. And I thank all of you for joining us too. Have a beautiful day. Gio, you still on?
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I show went good. Thanks a lot. Thanks
You're welcome. Everything sounded really, really good from my end. No, really, you know, I was trying to see if we had the same kind of background noise as before. Are you calling? Did you call in from the on a phone?
No, I'm on the regular computer. But, you know, in the beginning, a past show was in the background. And then all of a sudden it stopped. Yeah, that was last week when I was talking about the 60s. So that was my voice, and it was in the background. I don't know why that was running. But all of a sudden, it stopped, right at the beginning.
Yeah, it sounded like maybe... Were all the lines on mute?
Except for yours. And then I noticed there was one other caller. There was one other caller with a 702 area code. And then when Gio, when your name came up, then that line went off. Now, I don't know whether that's related to you or that was just an independent caller. I don't know if this is...
Yeah, that might have been an independent caller, but it's odd this where the background noise came from, unless... Because I didn't have last week, so I'm looking here to see if I had anything open. I don't not seeing anything open from my end in case
I
you know.
I see.
Was Adrian-san viewing another on her computer as well by any chance or no?
Adrian, did you have anything open on your computer? at that time? In the beginning? No, she says no, but... She didn't go on this time. She just listened from Ning.
Oh, that's odd. I wanted to... Well, that's a mystery. I'd have to do a little Sherlock Holmes investigating and
well,
see how that came to happen. Because the only way that could happen was if... The only logical reason, I guess, I can think of is that when... Let's see, because when I logged on and I logged on to the Ning site, the show, the last week's show played on its own, but I'm looking here and it looks like it didn't even play. And the other thing is that my microphone is always on mute. So even if I was listening to the show, it would have come in. So
yeah.
I'm kind of stumped how that, unless another line, and my other reason is maybe another line may have been opened, unmute, maybe by mistake or something, I don't know. You know, this is technology, and that's why when people say technology is perfect, I say, no, it's not.
Yeah, yeah. But then now, why did it stop, too? I mean, it, you know.
Well, that's why it almost seems like somebody kind of caught themselves, like they realized that they were perhaps.
Maybe. That's right.
Yeah,
maybe
they
was
were
a
listening.
Caller. It was a caller, and then they, you know, and it started the thing. That's right, huh? If someone called in.
Hello.
Yeah. I unmuted 414 and 702 area codes. I don't know who they are.
Well, 414 was my call.
Okay. That's Muyo Sensei there. Who's 702?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, you can. I'm 702.
I unmuted you, yes.
Oh, I'm 702. I thought your show was over because you said goodbye. And
yes,
then
it,
I hung
it is
up,
over.
And then I was listening. I was
okay.
listening to you, and then I thought I'd better put you out of your misery. And call
and
you and say, no, I'm here. It wasn't anything to do with anything. I just because I thought it was over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're just talking shop right now, but, and I don't have, you are?
My name is Deborah.
Okay, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed that. I only listened to you towards the end, and I really enjoyed you. Looking for some, you know, a show in the morning that relates to what I, you know, represent and what I live with, and yeah, it was beautiful.
Right.
Thank you.
Las Vegas is. Are you an hour later than California, or same
time
zone?
No, I'm the same time. Are you California?
Yes. So, yeah, we start at 8, so it must have been the same time for you. Okay.
Yes.
Well, thanks for joining with us.
Well, thank you. Are you every Sunday morning? Or?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And do you welcome callers? How do you work?
Yeah, we welcome callers, and we have a Ning site, computer site, but people can just call in too. So there's various ways to access the show.
Oh,
so.
All right then. So you can go on the chat and you can get links and things to your show.
Yes.
Mention also the newsletter that goes out. You might be interested in that.
Yeah, if you go to our website, brightdawn.org, you could request our free quarterly newsletter and, you know, become put on our mailing list and things like that if you're not already.
That sounds good. Thank you. I'll do that.
All right.
All right. Then you have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, Muyo Sensei, we got your card, and it's really nice. Really
well, that's my question. You know, did it look okay and meet with your approval? And
yeah.
I sent
out
everyone except Dave A. because I didn't have his address. I even sent one to Brazil.
You know, Gio, Muyo Sensei made a Bright Dawn business card.
Oh.
And, it uses our logo, and he's offers that format to anyone that wanted to make some cards for themselves.
Oh, okay. I'll have to get. I'll send an email to Muyo Sensei. Maybe send my information and see if I could get a copy just to see what it looks like.
Yeah,
right.
Do that. Just send it out. I'll get it out and turn around. It's just the basic format, but I think it turned out really nice.
Yeah.
And that was that's why I didn't send out a newsletter or what I've been doing this month. That's what I was doing.
You still got time. You got to write your quarterly report for next Sunday. Their class meets once a month on a Trailblazer post-induction program.
Mm.
So they have to write a quarterly report, what they've been up to for spring, all the seasons. Well, we only got 4 minutes left on our blog talk, so any last shop stuff?
No, I think everything sounded really good. I was glad to see that we have new listeners joining in.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah, it's like I say, you know, technology can be a blessing, and you know, it has its curses too. But there's that middle way.
Yeah, that's right.
As long as it gets out and people are really, you know, learning from it, and you know, like you always say, I always like that quote you made about the nugget. So I always think about that. I said that to a kid, about a child that he wanted to learn how to get a Dharma nugget, and he kept thinking that I was saying chicken nuggets. So whenever he would go to McDonald's, he would tell his mom, "No, the man told me I have to get a nugget."
That's precious.
And I always think about that because he was, but he was, you know, it that was his way of understanding. That was his
yeah.
nugget of
yeah,
truth.
Yeah.
And for
yeah,
him,
yeah.
you know, at his age, that was his chicken
yep.
nugget of truth.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Okay, until next time.
Okay,
okay,
until next
domo
time. Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.